Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I was mistaken earlier. I said the Blazers scored 18 points on their six transition baskets. They scored 19. They were 6-for-6 in transition and scored 19 points. I challenge you to find another case of that in the NBA playoffs this season, last season. That is a remarkable statistic. Speaking of numbers, Dave Bartu is the College Football Matrix. I got a lot of questions for Bartu. And he is a jack of all trades. We're going to find out what he knows about the NBA. Bartu, thanks, man, for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. I was waiting on hold, and the producer, the person talking to me, she was like, "Are you in a quiet place?" I'm like, "Is that how this interview is going to go? Do I need a happy place? I mean, what's going on here?"
We need you in a solemn, quiet space. It's like when you go to the dentist office and they have like the running water, and it's very zen.
Yeah, well, the cab of my pickup will work just fine.
There you go. Bartu, we're going to talk college football. I want to ask you about Herbert, Heisman, the numbers I see. Some people are saying the Pac-12 is a potential national champion. What should the odds be on that? But let's talk NBA for a second here. We're seeing a bunch of teams that shoot three ball and shoot it well win games. Is it that simple? Is this like a two-point conversion in football?
I think it's that simple, you know, but you know, when you look at it, it's a risk reward thing. Okay. It's and this is kind of your very basic analytics side of it, is, you know, obviously a made three is 3 points, made two is 2 points. So, you know, from a percentage standpoint, if you shoot 40% from three, I think last night the Blazers shot 40.6, that forces the other team just to be even on the two-point side to shoot 61%. Okay, now you look at Oklahoma City, and I guess, you know, I'm assuming you're referencing this series,
yeah,
you know, and how this could play out, is Oklahoma City on the year from two-point was at 50%, 51%. So you're asking a team, when the Blazers are shooting 40.6%, that is forcing an Oklahoma City team to shoot 18% better than they did for the entire regular season from two. 18%. You know, so the risk is everything is going in from three. The downside risk to it is that you're not hitting those and the numbers just aren't there. You know, it's a lower percentage. But you look going into this series, the Blazers for the season, 36% from three, Oklahoma City, 34. From 2 point, 51 to 50. The free throw shooting for the Blazers was better going into the series. This is a more efficient offensive team from the three places you can score in the NBA. So, you know, everybody was saying Oklahoma City, because of the superstars they have. But when you look at the numbers, it really says Oklahoma City has to win this on defense. They have to win it on the defensive side because they are not better shooters. And so far at home, you know, the Blazers have taken advantage of being a better three-point shooting team at home. And so, you know, to me, it's, you know, can they keep this up on the road and keep those numbers up? Because, you know, that's really the pressure they can put on Oklahoma City offensively is pushing those three. And so Oklahoma City really has to chase them off the three-point line to try to even up the game. And for on the flip side, I think for Portland, just let them shoot the threes. You know, they haven't been good at it all year. They're less than the Blazers in terms of their ability to shoot the threes. So if you look at the analytical side of it, at least on the offensive side, you know, to me, by the numbers, the Blazers are superior in every area. So that's why you get this talk about, okay, we need a lot of good three-point shooting, you know, shooters on our team. And you look at, you know, Golden State's a great example of it. You know, three of the best in the entire league. But look at Portland. Okay, I mean, look at your number one shooter, three-point shooter on your team. Who are you going to have to take that three? Lillard, right? You going to take him over Westbrook shooting threes? You're damn right. You going to take McCollum over George shooting threes? Damn right. Who's their third best one? Schroeder? Curry's number five in the NBA this year in three-point shooting. So, you know, to me, it's just being able to keep this up. And right now, as long as Lillard is able to absolutely chew up his defenders, blow by them, and if they're not double-teaming him, he's getting a layup. And if he's not getting a layup, he's kicking it out to guys, not one, but two. You have the wing and you have the corner, wide open all game long. Everybody's talking about this pick and roll and undefensible by Cantor. Dude, Oklahoma City has not been able to stop the penetration and the layups, or the penetration and the kickout. Great example of that was right at the end of that first half. Went in, triple teamed, guy rotated to the corner like he was supposed to, but Lillard was sitting on the wing. Bang. And if you're going to let Portland have wide open threes like that for the rest of this series, man, the analytics are going to love Portland's chances to win these basketball games.
Dave Bartu, he is the analytics guru, the College Football Matrix. Let me ask you, because you point out that the three-point basket is worth 1 point more than a two-point basket in the NBA. If we're playing in a pickup game where a three is worth two and a regular basket is worth one, I just want a bunch of three-point shooters, don't I?
Yeah. You know, because it just depends on the odds of how good the shooters are. But, you know, the greater the disparity between the value of a three and the value of a two, and in this case, it's 2-1, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's just a simple numbers game of being able to multiply your expected make percentage, you know, for threes and expected make percentage for twos, and do the math. And like I said, the math, everybody really, I think, focused on Nurkic so much, but what inside advantage does Oklahoma City really have over Portland? You know, there's nobody has a superstar inside. They're all pretty good players, but there's no superstar inside. So, you know, by the numbers, Portland's just simply been a more efficient offensive team throughout the season. And to me, during the regular season of college football, those are the most important numbers I ever look at, is offensive and defensive scoring efficiency. And the Blazers certainly had the offensive side coming into this series.
Dave Bartu with us, the College Football Matrix. Let's apply this to the two-point conversion versus the extra point. Mark Helfrich probably lost a game at Nebraska a few years ago, but where do you stand if you're advising a coach on, hey, should I go for two every time or go for one?
You know, it's funny because there's been a lot of articles written on it about why you should go for two every time. And the articles always focus on the big picture, okay? And what I mean by that is if you go for two every time throughout the season, you're going to score more points than going for one. The numbers just say that. But that's for the whole dang season, all right? That doesn't take into account that in, let's say, you know, you're 10-2. Let's say in those 10 games, you beat these teams so bad you didn't need it. But in the two games you lost, you needed that 1 point more than the two. You know, so everybody looks at it from the standpoint of being able to score more points in an entire season. Sure, that's great. But is it really going to help you win a football game? And, you know, I haven't been able to crunch the numbers on it because, you know, there's just so few instances of going for two. And people that have crunched the numbers said, well, you know, if you go for two or go for fourth down every time, look at the numbers. You know, it says to do this, but herein lies the problem, is right now when you go for it on fourth down, let's say inside the 50, most of the time, it's a surprise. It's not something that you defensively practice for, because people don't do it religiously. So let's just use Oregon for an example. If suddenly Oregon just said, hey, you know something, if it's fourth and whatever inside the 50, we're going for it every time. Because the numbers say if we'd have gone for it every time previously, this is our percentage. But the problem is when you habitually go for it every time, teams can prepare for that. And when teams can prepare for that, it changes the outcome paradigm of those numbers. So, you know, being able to say we should go for two every time or we should go for it on fourth down every time, it's based on a sample size in which these are usually outlier plays. They're surprise plays and things don't occur that frequently. So until we actually get like a full season where everybody goes for two or everybody goes for it on fourth down, it's really hard to say what the outcome is going to be. I know a lot of people conclusively say you should just do it every single time. But, you know, because for a season, the outcome is going to be better. But great, the numbers are better, but is your win-loss record better? That's really what it comes down to, you know. The guy you're having on next right now, if he goes 11-1 and is bottom 10 in every statistical category you could think of and barely wins football games, nobody's going to care because he wins football games, okay? 3 years ago, Oregon was top 25 in offensive scoring efficiency. They went 4-8. Last year, Texas was a top 25 team, potential playoff contender. They weren't top 50 in anything. So, you know, when it comes down to these decisions, it's easy from a fan standpoint to say, hey, the numbers say we should do this all season. But when it comes right down to it, you have 12 wins and losses, and it's not big picture. It's game day. It's that moment. And if the odds decide to rear their ugly heads in a failed fourth down or a failed two-point conversion like at Nebraska or Oregon against Auburn every freaking time they were in the red zone in the national title game instead of kicking a field goal. You know something? The odds seem to, you know, Murphy's Law, they seem to have a bad timing in which the odds go against you. So, you know, personally, I think it depends really on the situation. And until we start seeing teams religiously go for it, I think the sample size is too small to be able to conclusively say we should be doing this every single time.
Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix, is with us. Bartu, Justin Herbert as a potential Heisman candidate and the Pac-12 as a potential national champion. I saw a sports book said that the Pac-12 has a 21% chance of winning a national championship. That doesn't feel right to me.
I'd say they're probably closer to 2.1. No, I mean, seriously, you know, number one, I don't know where they get that crap. I saw some of that stuff, odds of making the playoffs. I'm like, number one, who cares? Right. I mean, it's just, you know, you talk about April fluff. But, you know, you look at the past national champions, all right, of the last century. You know, everybody now knows most of it flows through recruiting. And I started talking about it 15 years ago. Right here in Portland, and now everybody understands, you know, a lot of it flows through recruiting. So you look at the Pac-12, and who are your top 15, consistent top 15 recruiters in the Pac-12? UCLA, Oregon, and USC. And even not this year. USC didn't even pull a top 15 class. Neither did UCLA. You say they both pulled their worst classes this decade, which is almost unfathomable. And then you have Oregon. You know, so when it comes right down to it, to me, the best national championship contender you have in the Pac-12 is Oregon. All right? And then you start looking at the coaching side of it. You know, does Oregon have an offensive and defensive coordinator graded B-minus or better for their careers? No. They have a D offensive coordinator, and they have a two-year defensive coordinator that is graded at an A-minus. So they got a solid defensive coordinator, but the offense isn't there. You know, Washington, yeah, their recruiting's better. Their head coach is great. Their defensive coordinator's awesome. Their offense is sketchy, but they just don't have the talent to do it. So, I mean, if there was a bet out there that says the Pac-12 won't win a national title, I think that is much more of a safer bet and probably a better return on your money if you could get, you know, the odds on the flip side of betting against that. So I think the Pac-12 is a long ways away from being a national championship contender, maybe a playoff contender. Somebody makes a really good run given their schedule. But as far as the national championship goes, until things change in those schools or Washington somehow starts recruiting classes consistently top 10, top 15, I really don't see the writing on the wall for the Pac-12 seriously being a national title contender.
Dave Bartu, the College Football Matrix and the NBA Basketball Matrix as well. Hey, thanks for doing that. I really appreciate it. I wanted your brain on that, and you delivered.
Hey, it's always fun, man. Anytime, anywhere, you know where I'm at, bro.
All right, you're in the cab of your truck is where you are. I appreciate you, man. Bartu, you're the best. Thanks, man.
Peace.
All right. Mario Cristobal, Oregon Ducks coach, coming up top of the hour. Leave it here. You got the BFT. Big Splash is coming up. Mario Cristobal, Oregon Ducks football coach, top of the hour. But I told you lately that I appreciate you. I do. Whether you're listening on Fox Sports Eugene, KORE 95.7 FM in Eugene, the massive signal that goes into Eugene, Springfield, all the way to Albany and Corvallis. Appreciate everybody out there who makes this radio show part of their day. Klamath Falls, the ESPN affiliate. Also, people listening in Corvallis and in Salem on 102.9 The Game, and people listening via podcast, and people streaming the show at baldfacetruth.com. I had an email exchange today with a station in Medford. He's like, hey, how do we get the show? If you're listening in Medford via podcast, reach out to your local station and say, hey, want to carry the show? Enough with the national programming all the time. People don't care about the things you care about. We get the guests that you want to have on. We talk about the things that are happening here. It's like when charities say, your dollars stay local. Your opinions stay local. How about that? Does that fly? Big Splash is coming up, but this is not the Big Splash, but I have to point this out. Mark Shukin, who is the head of the Pac-12 networks, is taking people who have been critical of the Pac-12 networks to task. He says, we don't understand what the Pac-12 network's mission is. Shukin told reporters that, quote, "Are people who are critics of the network are people who, quote, don't understand the objective, end quote. He said the intent of the networks isn't to make money, rather to amplify the student athletes and their experiences, end quote. This is Mark Shukin, who's making a hefty salary, plus has a nice travel stipend. He doesn't even live in the Bay Area. He's flying back and forth from Southern California on the Pac-12's dime. But he's saying, hey, the point is not to make money. The point is, you know, amplify the experience. Well then, Mark Shukin, you're doing a fine job. I thought the point was to make money and distribute it to the conference members. But if that's not the objective...
I don't think the president's got that memo.
I love that, though, because if you really think about it, the area that the two areas that the Pac-12 network are terrible at are A, they don't raise enough money, and B, they don't have a distribution deal that is on par with their peers. So how the hell is that amplifying the experience of the college athlete? Just not amplifying in the way that the SEC or the Big Ten or the ACC or the Big 12 are, but way better than the WAC. Way better than the Mountain West, okay? Way better than the WCC. Mark Shukin.
Is it way better?
Fighting back. Those are fighting words. I just saw that and it caught my eye and I was like, hold on. Is he trying to say that we don't understand that the mission is not to make money? That this is altruism. We're here for the student athletes to, you know... It's like they're giving the student athletes foot rubs or something and televising it. Hey, our point's not to make money. We're here to make these people amplify their experience. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. Just go make money and get a good distribution deal and stop making excuses. All right, that brings us to our Big Splash.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the Big Splash. Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, the Trailblazers have been nothing short of dynamic. Incredible on offense. Incredible on defense. They've been better dressed. They've been happier than the Oklahoma City Thunder on the other side of this series. That is the Big Splash. The Blazers being up 2-0 in a best-of-7 playoff series. That's a big advantage, 2-0. And the Blazers, on 14 other occasions in which they have started 2-0 in a playoff series, have gone on to win the series. Game 3, Friday, Oklahoma City. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.